Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland, who is coping and seething. How are you, sir?
Doing well, doing well. Happy New Year, everyone. Looking forward to doing the show so we can talk about an interesting pay-per-view.
I think it was an interesting pay-per-view, and it was, in my opinion, had the best and worst elements of what I almost said WWE because it's kind of morphing into that, but what AEW currently is as a company. It had the absolute best and it had the worst. And I think that dichotomy is honestly the biggest issue in AEW. We've talked about that at length and we'll continue to talk about it as long as it becomes and still is a problem. But let's kind of start here, Fred. What do you think overall of the show?
I thought it was a pretty good show overall. I liked especially the Continental Classic, which I think kind of, frankly, I think that may, you know, carried the quality of the show. Some fantastic matches, breaking news, Will Ospreay, good at wrestling. I like it. I hated the main event. If anyone, I reviewed this site with friend of the show, Suit Williams, or I reviewed the show with friend of our show, Suit Williams, on the Voices of Wrestling site, and I was notably negative on the main event. We can get into why when we get to that. But if the show ended after Omega Ospreay, or I'm saying Okada Ospreay, and then the Omega return, I think it would have been a extremely good show. As it was, it was still very good. Let's be clear. I just thought that the main event was awful.
Yeah. I think your review at voicesofwrestling.com, which I implore everybody to go read, is a perfect encapsulation of what the main event was. And I will not spoil it. You will have to go check it out because it is worth your time. Where do you want to start kind of talking about the intricacies of the show, Fred?
Oh, let's just, I mean, look, there was nothing on the pre-show worth a damn, frankly. I mean, it wasn't bad or anything. It just, like, it was extremely forgettable. I mean, Toni Storm did a slightly long squash with this awful character she's doing. I cannot, the amnesia thing is just the last thing I want on my TV, but I guess, you know, a phrase that I'm going to keep saying, I guess, with regards to Toni Storm and the 2023 on period, I guess we're going to keep getting it. But she squashed more or less Layla Gray. It was like a bang average match. Jeff Jarrett had the most professional match possible with QT Marshall. It wasn't bad or anything. It was just like, it was an old school, like, completely confident, we're not trying to steal the show match. With Jeff Jarrett and Marshall, I mean, they're, you know, perfect for that kind of outing. It's just, you know, I'm not really going to say, hey, you should go check it out. And then they closed out Zero Hour with an 8-man tag, the Outrunners and Top Flight against Leo Rush. So it wasn't bad. You know, a little good action there. It's just, you know, above average, but nothing I'd say like, hey, you should check this out. So all that was utterly fine.
Yeah, I'm not a, I did not have a chance to watch the pre-show because the 28th was a big deal in my world.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what I had going on. Plus, listen, you have to watch the Alamo Bowl. That is mandatory viewing if you are somebody like myself. Plus, I was coming down off of the high that was the Pop-Tarts Bowl, which might be the greatest spectacle in all of sports right now. We had the return of the strawberry Pop-Tart, which was eaten last year. Cinnamon Roll was the Pop-Tart this year.
He was booed by his own teammates after that selection. The game MVP, was he not?
Yeah. I will say that Wildberry was probably my favorite Pop-Tart. Just an incredible personality Wildberry is. But enough about the Pop-Tart Bowl. I could talk about that literally all day and how great it is and why it's the best part of college football. But we are not a college football podcast. Unfortunately, we are an AEW podcast. And
give us time.
Brad, you want to start at the top of the card or you want to start at the beginning?
Let's go from the beginning and go on down.
Okay.
We opened with William Ospreay against Kyle Fletcher, and this match ripped.
Oh, God, did it rip.
It was so good. Look, there's some people that just hate Will Ospreay. I can't. It's one of those things that, like, I know that they genuinely feel that way, and they have their reasons and everything, but it's just such a viewpoint that I can't personally get with that. It's kind of like, all right, well, go ahead, but I can't stop you, but I don't understand it at all. Will Ospreay is just such an amazing performer. He's combines elite athleticism with like great match structure and storytelling, I think. Anyone that tells you in 2024 that Will Ospreay doesn't sell has just told you that they don't actually watch Will Ospreay matches and thus can be completely ignored. I don't know. Like, this is one of the very best stretches of a wrestler's career the past 5-ish years of all time. I can't praise him enough. He's such an extremely high level talent, and, you know, I mean, there's, you know, if you go back and read stuff, you'll find people like, oh, Ric Flair only has the same match all the time, and, you know, stuff like that. And, like, you know, not every great is going to gel with you. I understand that, too. But, my God, Will Ospreay is so good, and this, you know, Kyle Fletcher is properly identified and treated as a burgeoning star. I just love this match. I mean, I thought it was one of the best matches of the year. I gave it 5.25 stars because I'm a sicko with that kind of stuff. I loved it. I just loved this. Just an absolute, it was a great continuation of their feud. Kyle is such a great dickhead. Ospreay is a great babyface. Midway through the show, he cuts a fantastic rah-rah babyface promo, which is worth mentioning as well. It was before the Okada match. He was trying to get the fans invested, and I thought he did a fantastic job with it. I love this.
This, listen, I boldly proclaimed it. I think it was when Will Ospreay came into this company and he had the match. Was it with Swerve or Daniel? I might have been the Danielson match, or was it to catch the match? I don't even remember.
I'm not sure.
I remember when Ospreay came into this company, he had like his first really, really big match. I said Will Ospreay was the greatest professional wrestler to ever live. And every time this man has a great match, I am just reminded that I'm fucking right and everybody else is wrong. And that is not an insult to men like Terry Funk, Mitsuharu Misawa, Kenta Kobashi, Ric Flair. What Will Ospreay does is just, it combines everything that made all those guys great before him, where all the little things matter. He figured out how to sell. And we see this all the time in my world covering the National Football League and the NFL draft. You want to be right. You want your priors to be right. So oftentimes you stick to them way longer than you should. Will Ospreay used to be an atrocious seller. Will Ospreay used to be a spot monkey. He is not those things anymore. He hasn't been for years. And if you genuinely don't think that he's grown in those areas, you either, one, don't know what you're watching, two, are too stubborn to admit that your priors initially were wrong when at one point they were correct, or three, you just hate Will Ospreay because he used to be a douchebag on Twitter. It's one of those three things. Because when you watch Will Ospreay, he's brilliant. Him coming out looking like he got shot against Okada with the bright blood still on his chest. Oh, that was fantastic. On his face, his tape was covered in it. He didn't, and then he just had his head wrapped. Just that's the kind of stuff people would praise Terry Funk for, like for years, because everything mattered. And Will Ospreay, everything matters. And I think my two favorite parts of this match, one, he won by the Styles Clash, which
that was cool. Yeah,
Ospreay wins by multiple moves. I think that's great.
It's good. It's really good.
It's important for like future matches, because all of a sudden you have Ospreay. Hey, he had one of his four moves. This could be the end. And then near falls mean more.
Mm-hmm,
and two, Kyle Fletcher standing on the guardrail and tearing up the sign that says Ospreay's better, only for him to start walking to the left, and the guy pulls up another sign that says Ospreay's still better.
That was
and
so
he
good.
Doesn't do anything about it. It's just. That was great.
That was great.
I went 5 stars on this match.
A plus to that fad.
I genuinely believe this might be the year where you could have a list of only matches that Will Ospreay has been in your top 10 for Voice of Wrestling's match of the year. This is bonkers. What he is doing consistently, no matter the opponent, no matter the situation, you are great because you're facing somebody great, and then there is elevating. And there's having somebody's best match consistently. And that's Will Ospreay. The promos are coming around. He used to be a roughish promo, but
he's really good now. Yeah, man. It's not just this promo from the show, but the show is a really good example of it.
He is adapted really well to the American style. We all knew he would. There were questions about Okada initially because, well, it's Okada. He's not a super fluent English speaker. How they wrestle in Japan is not television wrestling. So they were like, okay, can he do it? We know he can. but how well will he do it? What kind of adaptation will there be? Well, and then he just kind of fucking crushed it. And it's not his fault that he's become bitch guy. But, man, did this night end up kind of catapulting him back to, hey guys, guess what? Okada's still here. Well, Ospreay's just the greatest of all time. Now, there are a lot of people smarter than me that will disagree, and I completely respect that and those opinions. But I just don't see how you can look at the work of Will Ospreay and say that he's not the greatest of all time when you take all factors considering the fact that he does all these high spots, links them together, uses great psychology with him. He can do ground-based stuff. He can do everything that you need him to do or want him to do, and he does it at the highest possible level. It's honestly absurd that this man is, what, 31 years old?
30, I think.
He has this kind of catalog? Fred, it's
wild. Insane. It's utterly amazing.
It is like we are watching Wayne Gretzky in real time.
Yeah, he is a singular talent. I'm not going to say he's the greatest of all time just because I think that's like a fool's game. You're but I think I am a coward. It is apparent, though, that he is among the very top echelon of professional wrestlers of all time. And I think that you would be hard-pressed to really, you know, without those, basically, I think you mainly covered the main exceptions of why someone would disagree with this. And I think it's either, you know, I don't agree with those arguments really at all. But he is so special at what he does. And this is a fantastic evidence of it. But I love this match. I couldn't tell you because they happened so quickly. It was so tight. The closing sequence in the Fletcher match was pristine. It was just really perfectly done. And it was a very impressive performance by both men in totality. Fletcher, if at worst case, is going to be like the 2020s Roderick Strong, I think. Like just a guy who is only air quotes here, very good at wrestling. I think there's definitely potential for him to be a top guy. We'll see on the progression of the charisma and, you know, promo skills. Those will be very important, obviously. And I think it's early to draw a conclusion off of those. But he, you know, this match was just fantastic.
So good, Fred. So good. And speaking of good, Kazuchika Okada defeats Ricochet to also make the finals of the Continental Classic tournament. I think we could have potentially seen better from this pairing, but I thought that this was a very good match. Somebody did the research, and I think it was the flagship guys when they did their instant reaction. They had only been in a ring together twice, and it was, what, the Power Struggle 2015 Road 2 shows?
Yeah.
So, and who knows if they even touched. I don't know how much they touched or what. It's hard to truly know when it's a six-man tag. But
without going back and watching, yeah.
I thought this was really good. I gave it 4.25. I think there's better. I think if they were to have like a couple tag matches and touch a couple more times and get a little bit more chemistry, I think they could do a lot more stuff, especially with how great of an athlete Okada is. But that Rainmaker sells tremendous. And like Ricochet could be an all-timer at that. It's Ricochet. I still think Elite Ricochet is there. It's just taking a little bit to get there.
Yeah, I think we saw a very good development in terms of his AEW run this past Wednesday with the heel. Well, not the heel turn, but the angle with Swerve Strickland. I think that you know, this was a really good match. And here's the thing. As someone that is, I've discussed this before on the show. I vote in the FSM 50. I take it very seriously. In fact, in December, I crammed so I could try to do the best ballot I could, and I watched, I believe, 200 matches, just trying to perfect my ballot. Obviously, there's, no real way to perfect it and everything, but two people that I have rather high on my rankings and that I've heard people dismiss as workers this year are Ricochet and Okada. And I agree that they've had better years, and I agree that there's better versions of them on tape and everything, or better performances or better output, whatever you'd like to refer to it as. But I also think that if you look at the years they had, I think they both had a lot of notebook matches, especially Ricochet when he came over to AEW. And I think, there's reasons to be critical of them. I think Okada, has it was a step down from his New Japan work just because of his usage and everything. He disappeared for like chunks of the year at a time, possibly because of a limit of how many like a contractual limit on how many matches he could work. And I think Ricochet has had some disappointments. Not this one, not the Okada one, of course, but the one before that pay-per-view match was with Takeshita was a letdown. It was very much not what I think anyone would have hoped when you saw that match on the card on paper. But he still had a lot of really good TV matches, and he was part of that fantastic three-way with Ospreay and Takeshita. And you can go on and on. I was there live for his Sammy Guevara match, and he was pretty darn good in that. And I think he was still kind of adjusting to not being in WWE at that point in time as well. I think both these guys are being underrated a little bit, which is weird to say. But like with Okada, I know that the instinct is that he should be, in terms of output, a top five wrestler in the world, and I agree with that. But if the guy this year, I forget exactly where I had him. I guess I could open it up in a second. But I probably had him in the 20s, I think. And like for Okada, that's a disappointment, but it's still the top 20 wrestlers or top 25 in the world. Like that doesn't mean that he sucks now. Just a pet peeve of mine. Anyways, I like this match a lot. I went 4.25 on it. I think I said that already. I just, it was they left some stuff in the tank, and that's something that happens in wrestling sometimes. And obviously, I would have loved if they were like, "All right, we're gonna try to have one of the best matches of all time," which they did not. And you can say, "Well, Okada was wrestling again that night," and that part of it makes sense. But selfishly, obviously, I would have liked if they went full bore and just tried to outdo Ospreay and Fletcher. But since they even if they didn't, they still put out a really, really good match. So
Yeah, I think the really good match aspect is good. I do think we can see more, and I'm intrigued to see more.
I really like Ricochet being heel though. He's done a great job of just being like, it's obvious that he's fantastic at, in kayfabe of being a wrestler, but he's just such a unnecessary jerk about doing it. I think it works really well. And I'm intrigued by his character work at this point in time.
Me too. Speaking of character work, let's talk about that, because right after this match, while Ricochet's still in the ring, out comes Swerve Strickland, and he and Nana make fun of him as somebody throwing a roll of toilet paper at him on the previous collision. And then Nana has this little cart. It looks like one of those collapsible gimmicks like you take to the beach. My wife has one of those that work out really nice, and hands out toilet paper for everybody to throw at Ricochet. If I recall correctly, Fred, this is a nod directly to Jimmy Rave, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Who was, of course, a part of the embassy with Nana back in Ring of Honor. I think that I saw some pushback on this angle. I'm not going to say it was great, but I will say that I think the crowd was into it, so that gives it, I think someone compared it to the Roman Reigns suffer and succotash promo, and I'm like, well, that didn't work. No one liked that. This at least did get the crowd to pop. I don't think it was like one of the coolest things I've ever seen, but I also didn't think it was egregious, so that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, it's interesting, the whole toilet paper thing. But I do think that we should talk about what then happened on Dynamite to kind of jump ahead, because I think this is a great encapsulation of everything. Ricochet really solidified that heel turn by stabbing Swerve in the forehead with a giant ass pair of scissors and then beating him senseless. And kind of getting a little cartoony, but I wasn't really offended by that. I thought he was just cartoony enough with like his emotions and his reactions. I thought it really worked for what they're trying to accomplish with him. And it kind of reminded me of when Swerve was like the comic book villain for a short time before he became AEW champion. I'm really excited about this feud. This
Me
could be
too.
tremendous.
Two great workers. They will have the potential to really, do fantastic stuff together, I think. I am very much looking forward to this. One thing that I really liked was Ricochet wearing those glasses that look like I can only describe them as serial killer glasses. I thought that was a hell of a look. I thought the angle was great in a, 3.5-star match, like pretty good, respectable. But yeah, from what I have seen of this week's Dynamite, I've only watched the first 90 minutes. I thought that was a very strong angle.
Very strong angle. And I'm kind of excited to see how this continues to grow and develop, because Swerve is one of my favorite wrestlers on the planet. And kind of coming into this company, he was always one of those guys where he was on my radar, but I hadn't really seen a lot of him. So when he came into AEW, a company that I watched extensively, I'm like, okay, I'm really excited about this. I've heard a lot about this guy. I want to see more. And then about a year and a half before he became the champion, you and I, Fred, were screaming that he should be the next world champion.
He was getting really hot organically, and it felt like that he was on his way to being something special. Now, it is interesting, I think, to go back and look at that period of time, because they brought in Okada and Ospreay at the same time, right around when he was when Switch Strickland was taking the championship. And it was very tempting to say, oh, well, we need to move the title quickly to Ospreay or Okada to solidify them in this company. And they didn't. And I think there's a question of have they booked Ospreay entirely correctly? Has he been featured enough? Because I think he feels like a very special guy at this point in time in AEW. But he feels also like, there's a concern that maybe he's lost too much. I don't know. But I think that they did do right. They did a great job of solidifying Swerve Strickland as a real main event star in this company. And at worst, that aspect of the decision making or the calculus worked out. So kudos to them for making that call. I think that they did. They definitely didn't make things worse by like panicking, and like, oh, we gotta put the title on Ospreay, and that now, but we also have to make sure that Okada has it, because he's a big deal too. The kind of like modern, we have to make sure everyone has the championship so that we all know that they're important people, even though there's other ways to make wrestlers important. And I think in one of the AEW booking wins of 2024 that they didn't, you know, go for that panic kind of move.
I agree. I'm big on not kind of doing like the panicky kind of stuff. Like there's, and we're going to talk about this exact thing, sticking to your guns versus panicking. And speaking of sticking to your guns, Fred, I believe the next match is MJF versus Adam Cole. Am I correct?
Actually, no, you were forgetting, although, you know, I can see why you would. Thunder Rosa, Mariah May, in that street fight for the AEW Women's World Championship. I was worried that this was going to be like a, you know, a 2019 SmackDown, air quotes here, hardcore match, you know, where they just did weapon shot after weapon shot. It wasn't that. I will say that I don't think it was a great match by any stretch. You know, it got meandering at points, but also there were some parts that were really good. Rosa has historically done well at this style of match. This Thunder Rosa Britt Baker in like 2019 or 20 or 21, you know, early AEW, this wasn't. But, you know, it wasn't bad by any stretch. I thought it was fairly good, 3.25 stars. And, you know, it was, you know, it didn't disappoint. It wasn't like a real stinker kind of situation. That said, I think we got to talk about Mariah May's 2024 is nothing but a big disappointment for AEW. You can, you know, I think in general her match quality has been a big letdown. And I, you know, this is this go, you know, to your prior setup of like sticking to your guns, you know, obviously they have 100% stuck to their guns, the whole Toni Storm or IMA thing. I think a problem in AEW this year has been sticking to their guns on some things that they arguably should have moved away from. Specifically, I think the Toni Storm thing at some points they could have shifted better. And also the next match, MJF, Adam Cole. I just think that we got to have a conversation at some point about, okay, are we, is this actually succeeding? Because, you know, there's the sunk cost fallacy of, well, we put all this time into developing the storyline, so obviously we have to continue the storyline so that that prior stuff wasn't wasted. But, you know, if it's not good, then you should just move on. And I do think that's a shortcoming of AEW this past year.
Fred, I agree. I think one of the interesting things that I'll be kind of looking at with the Mariah May stuff, and I thought the plunder match was fine. It's weird that they did a plunder match, but you got to wonder about Thunder Rosa's back in that situation if she just can't do a standard match anymore.
Yeah, smoke and mirrors has its place, you know.
Mm-hmm. But I thought it was good. I went 3.5. They worked really hard. I thought the kind of messy Storm Zero spot onto the table for the finish was awesome.
Yeah, because that was
good. It looked real. It didn't look like a wrestling move. It looked, it kind of resembled a fight. And I thought that kicked ass. But I'm just kind of over Plunder. Like, to me, Plunder's got to mean something.
This was very much it not meaning something, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. But they worked really hard. Nothing got botched. Hard to complain there. But Mariah May's got to step it up. And even when she came over from Stardom, like there was a lot of hype and there was a lot of like, this is bounds of potential. And I still think that potential is there. But it was evident even in Stardom that she was just green. She was raw. And she needed time and nurturing. And I just don't think they've given her enough of that. I think they, like, bringing her in how they did, I thought was the right move. You know, doing the storyline with Toni, I thought was, at, even though it meandered at points, the overall construct of it was good. They culminated well at All In. But it felt like one of those stories where they had an end goal in mind, but then no follow-up. They didn't know what to do. And I think that's hurt her just as much as she is not quite ready for all the other elements of being a top woman in this company. And I think that's okay because Mariah May is, what, 26 years old.
Yeah, she's young.
She's young. And it takes time. Like, when Anna Jay first started with this company, she was like, what, 19 or 20?
Something like that. Like, ridiculously young.
Yeah. And she's improved, but I don't think she'll ever be like a top woman in this company. But you can see like a ton of improvement from that time where she like first started in major television wrestling to where she is now. I think we need to give her a little bit of grace while still giving a lot of constructive criticism for the sole fact that it's just hard to do this stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 And Willow was not like Willow, I think, is the great success of AEW's women's division. She came in as promising, but not there yet. And in the interim, she has become, if she didn't have like a weird second half of the year, she would have been a lock for my FSM 50. As is, I had to leave her out just because like the last 3 months of the year was, she disappeared from AEW, and most of her other stuff I either didn't get to see, so I can't judge it, or what I have seen is it was just like kind of disappointing. I, you know, maybe in a year or two or even this year we'll have a real breakout from Mariah May, and she'll really step it up as an in-ring performer. But you know, I don't think you can, I can't, at least I can't look at what she's done and say that she's really been a success.
There's still hope. And I think we'll leave it at that, just because we could just kind of talk in the same points over and over and over again.
Yeah.
The talent's there. Can they harness it? And I'll be honest, AEW hasn't done a great job of harnessing talent and really nurturing it and developing it. They've done a great job of guys who are already there. It's kind of like the NXT thing. Who did NXT really grow and develop?
Right. Yeah.
Like Sasha was an indie worker who was really good by the time she got there. I guess your biggest success is probably Charlotte Flair. But even so, she's fucking Ric Flair's daughter.
Yeah, like, she should be good, you know. Like, now I also understand that, like, you know, that David Flair existed, right? So there's that. But, you know, I mean, it's just, we're in this situation where it's tough for AEW to develop talent. And I think part of it is that they don't do house shows. I've long said that they should have like a integrated talent agreement with indie companies to like have some of their younger talent appear on those shows and send some veteran, you know, Dustin Rhodes comes to mind, but someone to like go to these shows and be like, oh, okay, so the ring is properly set up. They don't, you know, I'm here on the behalf of AEW to make sure that, you know, their talent is treated well. But, you know, short of that, there's just not enough TV time. It's very funny, in the aftermath of Rampage, their C show, you know, God, I forget who it was. It might have been Brian Rose. Apologies if that's wrong. But, you know, the reviewer of the last episode of Rampage on the Figure Four Weekly site was like, well, thank God that's done. And it's like, you know, there is a place for C shows. We don't have to be like, oh, this show sucks because we're not getting, you know, insert major match here every week, right? It pretty quickly, Rampage pretty quickly. We didn't really talk about the end of Rampage, so I guess I'll turn this into that real quick. We never really did, or we rather quickly, I should say, saw the shift of Rampage from like 1 hour kind of a B show to, oh, this is entirely, this is definitely a C show, you know. It is a low-level show with mid-card, you know, lower-level talent, and no real big matches. I think they went too far with that, to the detriment of the ratings for the show, which I think is, you know, it has, with the way things are right now in general for AEW's business, I think that's hard to not look back at as a mistake. You know, you don't want to go blasting, you know, every week, and every week of the show is not going to be CM Punk's return or even Christian Cage and Kenny Omega for World Championship. But you know, I do think there is an onus on you to make the show be somewhat interesting and worth people's time. And I think that they, at times, AEW fell well short of that. And that was a disappointment. But yeah, I think the development of talent is going to continue to be a interesting question for AEW. Just how do they do that going forward? And I think Mariah May will be a key part of like that evaluation.
Yeah,
Ta-da.
I'm really excited to kind of see how that grows and evolves. And speaking of grow and evolve, let's grow MJF and Adam Cole out of this fucking bullshit. This might have been the worst well-worked match I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it was fine.
There was nothing offensive about the work. I thought technically it was sound. The match structure even makes sense. But good Lord, was it awful and a giant stack of crap. I don't want anything to do with this. It feels like, based on Dynamite, that we're finally moving away from this bullshit, which, thank God, this sucks. It's irredeemably bad.
I think it's always going to be kind of amazing that they went back to the storyline at all. I didn't hate this match. I thought the match was reasonably well worked. I thought that the crowd was kind of into it, and kind of not. It definitely, if you know, went from like the early days of the Bruce Hacho storyline and went to this crowd reaction to their blow-off match, I think you'd be impressed and not in a good way. I'm just glad they finally blew this off. I mentioned the sunk cost fallacy earlier. I think they were majorly AEW. Another big error they made was not just saying, okay, listen, Adam Cole's healthy. I know that we have this set up for a big blowout or blow off between you and MJF. We're just not going to do this. And they kept doing it, and they did not get over. They got very tepid reactions to the return of Adam Cole. I thought Adam Cole, I thought he lost a lot of juice with that with his return, and I think they did him no favors pairing him with MJF on that return. It just I don't think anyone really wanted to see that, and I'm glad it's over. Hopefully maybe one day we'll be able to have those two in the ring again and not have the crowd instantly turn on it. But I am kind of dubious. This seems kind of like AEW's pairing of Randy Orton and John Cena, where in the bad days of the mid-teens, they really tried to push those two as anytime they faced off was extremely special. And I remember, I think it was a Royal Rumble or something where they did a stare down and the crowd just crapped all over it. I mean, what is there? The match was competent, it was well worked, it was structured well, and it was fine. It was 3 stars. It was like a total gentleman's three. I have nothing else to really add here. I'm just glad it's over.
Me too. It sucked.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Yeah, let's move forward, Fred. What's the next match?
Next,
TBS.
It was the International Championship. Kunesuke Takeshita defeating Powerhouse Hobbs to defend it. This was really good. I'd hope for a little better, just considering the guys. I think Hobbs, if he was not injured, would have been like a top 50 guy this year, or at least in contention. You know, there was a really interesting moment in this match where Takeshita tried to do a power slam on Hobbs. Or I'm sorry, a superplex, I should say. And I'm not sure like whose fault it was or what really happened there. You know, but you know, they kind of both fell off and lost their balance. And it looked dangerous. But both guys were okay, seemingly. But that got the crowd more invested in the match. So like when we talk about like a fortunate botch, this is a great example of that. This really, you know, unexpectedly, and I don't think this is something that most people would have, you know, if you told someone these two people were having a match and they messed up a superplex, you would not expect the next sentence to be, and then the crowd got really into it because of it, but it really did. I thought Takeshita was more methodical here than I expected. I wonder how much of that was like, this is Hobbs' first really big singles match since his return, versus like just Hobbs's style or what, you know. It was a little interesting, but I thought this was a lot of fun. I gave it 4 stars. Takeshita, it was a little sudden of a finish, but Takeshita just kind of kicked Hobbs in the knee and then hit the raging fire and won. And that was it. But I thought Hobbs came off really well here. I'm interested to see what is next for him. And I like this match a lot, man.
I came away from this match, Fred, thinking that the one match I want to see more than any other in the world right now, other than Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada, is Powerhouse Hobbs versus Shingo Takagi.
Hell yeah.
The other one that I would really like to see, I want to see Powerhouse Hobbs versus Takashi Sagara.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That would rock too. I'd enjoy that. Or Kitamiya.
Oh, Kitamiya would be great too. Just.
Yeah.
Like, I would love for Hobbs to get a huge push in this company. I don't know if it'll ever happen. But I would love for Tony Khan to be like, you know what, Hobbs? I love you, but I don't have enough for you right now. Why don't you go to Noah for 3 months and just beat the shit out of people? Like,
yeah,
that would be so much fun.
Or even, you know, obviously New Japan with the strong division would be a good spot that he could hang out at.
I just need more Powerhouse Hobbs. He fucking rules. And the clock's ticking. He's like 34 or something. He's old.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thought this was very fun. So I think I would love to see Hobbs. Just, he needs a massive push in 2025. This needs to be a year of Hobbs. But, you know, I heard on the post-pay-per-view flagship that Lanza and Rich Craich were hypothesizing that that the issue, or that Tony Khan just doesn't like pushing big guys. And I can see some evidence for it. You know, I think he's been very much wanting to develop Hobbs as a guy. So I think that's kind of a counterpoint to it, but I think Lance Archer has been terribly underutilized. But other than that, I mean, you know, I don't know that he's really gone all in on pushing any, you know, larger people that he signed. But
yeah, I found that very, very interesting. Very, very interesting, because got a point. I still think Lance Archer should have been like a champion at some point. And I would have made him the first TNT champion over Cody. You can't argue that the Cody TNT title run was one of the best runs that we've had in this company ever, because of what it did for so many people.
I don't think you. I can't get on board with saying that Cody should not have had the first TNT title run the way it went. I think it was such a success, but I agree that it's. I'm surprised Archer has not been featured more in AEW. He's a great talent, and I think that they could have really added some stuff at some points, and instead he spent a lot of time on the sidelines, which I can't really get with. But here we are.
Yeah. Now let's get to one of my favorite matches of the night, Fred. TBS title, Mercedes Moné versus Chris Statlander. How great was this? Is this the best non-Plunder women's match in AEW history?
A contender, for sure. Mercedes Moné, when she came in, I was down on her performances. First of all, they really wanted to have her talk a fair bit. Again, I wonder if she has a limit on how many matches she'll work a year, you know, just kind of how she's been used. That's an interesting question I have that will not get answered, I don't think, anytime soon. But I also think that they wanted their matches to feel special. Early on ones, I think, were very underwhelming. And you can point to some of her opponents as part of the problem there. But, you know, regardless, you know, she's supposed to be one of the best women's wrestlers in the U.S. history, and she's underwhelming at first. It's just facts. She has, the second half of this year, she's really pulled it together, I thought. And I think she's had a strong last few months. You know, the Chris Statlander series has been phenomenal. I thought the Willow Nightingale match was, which was back in May, of course, but was also fantastic. She also had the Hazuki match on the Strong Style Evolved show for New Japan a couple weeks ago, which was fantastic. If we can keep this coming, if we can have less of the bad, like, straight out of NXT segments that she was doing for a little bit with, like, Okada and him, like, being implied to have a crush on her kind of stuff, which, not great. I am up on her heading into 2025, and I'm very glad that that is the case.
Yeah, I thought this was great. I loved the pile driver spot on the apron. I thought Moné, I want your opinion on this, because I didn't think this was chicken shit. I thought this was really tactful. Getting Statlander's boot caught in, like, the ring apron where they have, like, the weaved wire, that, so she had to take her boot off in order to finish the match. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, that was cool.
It didn't scream chicken shit to me. What do you think?
I liked it. I thought it was an interesting idea. I thought it worked well.
It was very Eddie Guerrero, which of course it was, right?
Yeah, well, of course, yeah. I mean, it's it's Mercedes Moné. I mean, we're legally required, this is me saying this, but we're legally required to have at least one Eddie Guerrero match in everything she does. Parentheses, respectfully, in parentheses. I liked it a lot. I thought it was a cool idea. I thought it was a interesting way to get to the closing stretch of the match. I liked it a lot. I thought this was a really, really strong match.
Yeah. I went 4.5. I thought this was great. This was honestly just great. Speaking of great, Continental Classic Final. Kazuchika Okada defeats a half-murdered Will Ospreay to win the Continental Classic. I'm going to be honest, Fred. I'm lower than other people on this match as a whole. I went 4.5+, and it seems
like a hater.
I am a big hater. I really liked it, and I thought the finishing stretch was great, but the initial, like the glut of the match, I thought was a little too much. like they just got a little too meandery for me.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't disagree.
Very good. Very good closing stretch. The Styles Clash, like false finish was tremendous. And this is why having multiple finishers matters, because mm-hmm. he beat Kyle Fletcher with the Styles Clash. And now the same crowd just saw it. Oh, Ospreay's going to win. And yeah. that's how you build up a match. I thought that element was great. But it just, I'm like, I keep hearing people saying, like, this is like a classic G1 final. And I'm like, just a notch below that. I thought it was great. I thought these guys busted their asses. But this is going to hit my match of the year list. And I think I'm in the minority there based on kind of how people are talking. Like, it's not going to sniff it. But I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. It's okay to, like, just have a match be, like, really good and not match the year. And I think that's what they did here.
Yeah, exactly. Just, it was nice to see Okada be Okada.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to see that.
Yeah.
But it was more about the post-match with this, where Christopher Daniels comes out and says, hey, I, as of today, I'm no longer an EVP with All Elite Wrestling. And then everybody knew it was coming, and it did not disappoint. Kenny Omega does not come out of the heel or face tunnel, comes out of the new Okada tunnel.
Yeah.
And looks like $1 billion in his suit, looks like he's in incredible shape, hands the belt to Okada, and then they have the camera shot, which I'm really excited for the WrestleTix update on this. Because it was a shot of Omega Okada facing the Grand Slam banner. Those two are wrestling in Texas.
Yes,
I don't know how we get there, but that's going to happen.
They were not particularly subtle about it either. Mm-hmm. It was very funny how they were like, hey, guys, it's happening, you know, without saying anything.
Yeah,
but it was like the most obvious shot they could make to be like, listen, it's happening.
And now we know.
Yeah. Not a complaint, to be clear. Just be saying, like, look, if you're not walking away from this thinking, oh, we're going to get these two in a match in the big stadium show, I don't know that I can help you. You know, it's hard to make that more obvious, I think, but.
Yeah. I can't wait for Omega versus Gabe Kidd. I think that was going to be phenomenal. I think Gabe Kidd it's going to be his coming out party, because everybody, like, there are a lot of people who really believe that Gabe Kidd could be a guy.
Yeah.
And I think he's got all the talent and charisma to be a guy, but he just has not quite gotten to that point yet. And I think this is the coming out party. This is when you potentially see, like, this War Dog start to turn on him, or him leave the War Dogs, however that ends up manifesting. And you get to see Gabe Kidd really, spread his wings and fly. This is it. This is when it's going to happen. And I'm really, really excited, Fred, to see that, because I think Gabe Kidd could be fantastic.
Yeah. I think, honestly, I think he already had a fantastic year. Just personally, I think he did really well. This is probably the third best guy, maybe fourth. No, fourth best guy, I think, in New Japan this year, which, I mean, is still really good. I know we could talk about how, you know, they had a talent during and everything, which they did, but it's not like that they went, you know, from Okada and Ospreay in the main events to, you know, Togi Makabe in 2025. still plenty of talent there. And I think he's acquitted himself very well. I think he still maybe could figure out how to be a little less, The whole, like, super intense thing with him is going, it's an essential part of him. I don't think you can get rid of that. That said, there's going to be a shift there, I think, in how he does some of it. And I think that'll be interesting to see as we progress with his development. But yeah, I think he's great. I think he's really a fantastic talent, and one of the best young stars in wrestling today.
Mm-hmm. And good news that Kenny Omega will be at the next Dynamite next week. So he will make his AEW television return, which is going to be awesome. I'm very excited about the return of Kenny Omega. Honestly, I think this company has missed Kenny Omega so much. And it I don't think we've talked enough about the people that AEW has been missing, because we've been talking a lot about how AEW has just been struggling, but you don't have Okada. Now you don't have Danielson. Hangman Page has been in and out for the better part of a year.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a huge portion of your company. Moxley was MIA for a while because, you know, for whatever reason, we don't know 100% for sure, but we know he's been unhappy with the creative direction. And he just kind of went off and did some CMLL stuff, won the IWGP championship. Like, it feels, AEW feels whole again with Kenny Omega back. This is the heart and soul of the company. And once you get the Bucks back, I think you're going to see Omega and the Bucks defeat the Death Riders and kind of take back the company, so to speak.
Yeah. I think that Moxley and I would have to have a conversation about creative. But, I think that, you know, AEW has been a little snake bit in certain ways. I think some of it's been self-inflicted, let's be clear. And I think, you know, we're seeing some progression of symptoms of issues that have been under-addressed or just would be too difficult to address in, like, 3 months, which I think they are going to be facing. But, yeah, I'm... You know, I'd love to see AEW at full strength, but boy, anymore, I think that's like a theoretical thing more than anything that could even be practical. Because you'd have to start including, like, Ricky Starks, you know, that's a guy that I think is fantastic. I love Ricky Stark. And I don't, you know, it's a big question of, like, where does he fit into AEW anymore? And I don't think that's like him wanting out or anything. I think it's very weird, the stuff that's going on there. I'll just leave it at that. That's, you know, we'd obviously love for AEW to have a better 2025, because there's been some shortcomings, but, you know, it'd be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I agree. Now let's get to the worst part of the show, and that was the four-way. Jon Moxley pins Switchblade Jay White to retain his title. Fred, I'm going to be honest. I thought the closing stretch was pretty good. I hated this. There was no juice. Nobody cared. The wrestlers worked hard, but I just thought this stunk.
Yeah, I can't cite a lack of effort or anything on this match, but I went dud on it. I just hated it. 0.0. The initial turn of the Death Riders was so good. And what we have got since then is so disappointing. And I just don't see them. I don't get the feeling that it's being corrected. AEW does seem to have an issue where top card things have to sometimes they may stumble out of the gate a little bit and then they gotta right themselves. That's been happening seemingly more and more with AEW these days. It'd be nice to not have that. Ideally, I think you'd like your booking to be good out of the gate, but call me crazy. I don't know, man. I hated just the story of this match. I thought it was dumb, just ridiculous. I just hated this. You know, the story of, like, well, there's these three baby faces that could stop the invader, though. Is he really invader? I don't know. But they can't get along because they keep fighting themselves. I think that just kind of makes your your baby faces look dumb, frankly. And I don't think that does anything to get over, you know, your heels. I hated this. I hated it so much. I hated it tremendously. I'm glad that they're done with these guys apparently being in the world title match or picture. But at this point in time, I have no faith that we're going to get anything, you know, especially better. You know, we could talk about the post-match here where Adam Copeland, or apparently how he's now going to be referred to, Cope, came out to challenge with FTR by his side. I don't have anything problem with those guys, but, like, you know, if we keep talking about how this is for the soul of AEW, which is, I've been cringing over ever since they started doing that. And to have the defenders be Adam Copeland and FTR, I don't know, man. I'm not going to completely bury it because they've been pretty much baby faces more or less the entire time they've been in the company, both acts. Copeland, you know, rather quickly, you know, established himself as a babyface, as a high level guy, but I also think we never saw any evidence that he was moving a single number at any point. Like, he just would get over, you know, people would pop for his appearing, and then that'd be about the extent of the return. I don't care. this doesn't do anything for me. Watching the start of Dynamite, I haven't got to the last half hour with Adam Copeland in it, but the first half, you know, the very start of the show, I frankly feel bad for Excalibur, because he's got to be the one to be like, oh, and now the man who is referring to himself as Cope. I think that's so cringe, personally. I mean, you know, ignoring all that, I don't have a problem with Copeland theoretically being like a, hey, I'm going to stop you kind of guy, but I don't feel like it's really going to matter. I don't think it's going to be a success, and this is a company that's already struggling mightily with the box office, and I, you know, if they originally slated this angle to take 9 months for someone to beat Jon Moxley, I think I'd be talking about maybe making it 4. You know, it's about moving the timetable up a little bit. But, you know, this, we've already said this company is one that it is hesitant to change things sometimes, and that works out so well sometimes, and at others, not so much.
I don't mind the Cope thing, and I'm going to be in the minority. I kind of thinking about this one, I wish it was somebody else. Like, I think you could have found a better guy for this spot, but Cope's going to work extremely hard. You can tell he's motivated, and I think he really does want to work with Jon Moxley.
I don't doubt. Let's not act like that he's brave. This is not me actually burying him, but like, ooh, brave enough to work the main event.
No, I mean, just work with the
I'm just
wrestler,
kidding
John
you.
Moxley.
I know. I'm just messing with you.
I know exactly what you mean, and that's completely fair. Two, I almost think like FTR and Cope are good soldiers for this war, in a roundabout way.
Yeah, don't have a problem with them really, but like it doesn't seem like a drawing thing to me, is my criticism.
Yeah, Ibu of WrestlePurist had a really good point where he talked about when WWE guys don't become WWE guys anymore and they just become, you know, wrestlers in their new company. It's when they do. It kind of talked about when they do enough to completely like separate themselves from their previous company.
Right.
I think FTR is so far away from the revival that I don't consider them ex-WWE guys anymore in that kind of sense.
Exactly.
Cope, I don't think will ever be a true ex-WWE guy, but you can tell that dude is just fired up and passionate to be a pro wrestler, and he is all AEW. Like, he's not taking shots at WWE. He is just all about what are we doing and how can we make it great.
Yeah, and I like having him around in that sense. This is not like an outright criticism of him as anything he's done. I think I think the return on him as far as like effort has been higher than I feared it would be, and I definitely give him credit for that and praise him for that. I don't know that he's making a difference at the box office. You know, this will be a big test of that. But I guess you could just counterpoint that with, is anyone, you know, and I guess, you know, you could, that's fair enough. You know, I can't really disagree, you know, frankly, but I think that this, you know, AEW's top priority should probably be trying to get to the next hot act. And I think that going with the next challenger being Adam Copeland just kind of delays that. And it's not a criticism of him. I just don't see like the path to drawing.
Yeah, I don't know if there's necessarily a path to drawing, but I think the in-ring will be good. I think that they'll be really interesting. And I like to kind of get back to my original point. I think having Cope and FTR as these guys trying to fight for AEW, they kind of personify the heart and soul of what AEW is. They're wrestling nerds who love to get in the ring and fucking wrestle and do that shit and do it all the time. No bullshit. And I kind of think that rules. Yeah, sure. It's not Darby Allin. It's not Cody. It's not the Elite. But I also think this works. And I don't think we're giving them enough credit because it's not who we want. And will it work? I don't know. But I'm okay giving it a chance because I do think it could be really interesting. I think you can build off of this. I do think that eventually when you get Cope and Christian together, they should be called Cope and Seethe. Because I think that's just a tremendous bit that they would absolutely do. I'm more intrigued about how they're going to build this and follow it up than I was mad about the turn. I actually thought the challenge was pretty good. I found it really interesting, the approach that Cope used in his promo on Moxley, calling him like a little boy and saying that when he started in this business that Moxley was just growing pubes.
Go ahead.
I am not going to tell you it was good. I'm just going to say the verbiage was interesting. To me, it's always about the follow-up. How are you going to follow up a major storyline shift? Because the follow-up matters more than the delivery itself initially. Because if you follow up something good with a bunch of shit, it doesn't matter. If you follow up something that just bombed with a lot of stuff that's really good, you know, that ends up mattering even more. So what are they going to do with this? How are they going to grow and evolve it? That to me matters a lot more. And I want to see that. I don't think we saw enough on Dynamite to have any form like of concrete opinion that this is going to be good or this is going to be bad or this is going to be whatever. But how do they keep following it up? And where does that lead? That's more important to me. And that's why I found the line interesting because Moxley's like 40. Cope is 51. We're not talking about these guys being like 45 and 25. But yeah, just the fact that he used that, I found to be very interesting. And I want to see if they evolve it. And Cope, with the Learning Tree talking to him, called Brian Keith a kid. And he's almost like reverting to this uncle who just doesn't respect today's generation and calling him bud and kid, almost like in a disrespectful tone.
Is that a babyface thing, though?
That's a Great question. I just find it interesting, and I want to see more. I want to keep seeing follow-up. Could it be something? Sure. Could it be nothing? Probably. But that just stood out to me.
Okay, so I don't, you know, obviously you can't fully judge it the whole time, right? Because you can't fully judge the whole storyline because we haven't had the full storyline, et cetera, et cetera. All that stuff is true. One thing I do want to say is I think I am 100% in the, I'm going to start a theory that maybe we should not be letting Adam Copeland be doing shoot promos or comments because this is the second time he's done one. And it's been a little like, are you sure we want to be making that point? So we had the whole thing with Ricky Starks where he did drop the line on him during their little storyline that kind of ended shortly after. Dropped a little line about how you're a Rock ripoff, which he's really not. You know, if you actually pay any attention to Ricky Starks, he's a charismatic guy who dresses in that kind of vaguely fancy rock heel rock way, I guess. But like that's about where it ends. You know, he doesn't rip off the mannerisms, all that stuff. It's not a correct assessment, in my opinion. But I think that obviously caused some unhappiness, just considering what happened after it. I don't have any inside information. This is just me tea leaf reading. I think this is the second time we've had Adam Copeland try to do a little shooting, and maybe it didn't go the way he wanted it to. And so I think maybe we need to have someone take him aside backstage and be like, maybe we take it easy with the hot shot stuff. You know, also considering that this company has a history of issues caused by surprise, you know, commentary. But all that said, you know, we'll see how it goes. I don't, you know, again, I appreciate what Copeland has done in AEW. I think he's worked really hard and has tried to do his part. And I think that is very admirable, and I have liked what he has done. All that said, this is a company that's kind of in between, you hope, in between high water marks. And given that, you know, I think it'd be more conducive, you know, doing something more directly productive of getting that new top star on top. But, you know, if they feel like they got to do that elsewhere in the card, all right, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. And that was World's End. Yeah. I do want to point out one thing on Dynamite that I thought was absolutely tremendous, Fred. Before the tag match against the Hurt Syndicate, Max Caster and Anthony Bowens were backstage giving a promo. Caster starts talking about how he's the greatest wrestler or whatever. And then Bowens interrupts him and it's like, did you mean to hit me with that belt on Collision? And I thought Caster had the best line that I don't know if I've ever heard this before. He just straight up asked Bowens, why did you wait until now to ask me when we're doing an interview?
Yeah.
Like it just calling out that thing is preposterous. The fact that, I'm going to wait till an interview to ask. That was great.
Yeah. I like phenomenal. That was a good touch. That was a good touch. I think that, it's not a surprise that we've kind of been out on the, you know, how it seemed like they wanted to keep doing the Acclaimed as the babyface act, and like they had gotten well stale and we had fans start to turn on them. I think it's obvious that a change was needed, and I'm glad we're changing it. I'm interested to see where this goes. I think that this could work out well. I think I personally believe that Caster, sorry, I got tongue-tied there, is a much better heel than he is a babyface. So we'll see how this continues to develop. But I think this lines up better with Caster's strengths than weaknesses. And so I'm happy that we're getting this development.
Me too. Me too.
Long overdue.
Anything else from you on this show, Fred?
I don't think so. Hopefully, I just really hope that we get a better main event picture and that we don't fall into more traps that AEW sets for themselves with their booking, with in terms of like, oh, we have this storyline that we've started, we have to finish it. I think that they just absolutely sometimes need to evaluate and move on when it is necessary. And a couple storylines that I would have ended long ago finally were blown off at this pay-per-view. So hopefully we will continue to move in the right direction.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not understood the glory that is the Pop-Tarts Bowl, please, yeah, just go YouTube the Pop-Tarts Bowl and or search it on Twitter/X. A ton of great stuff from the Pop-Tarts Bowl. If AEW did a pay-per-view like the Pop-Tarts Bowl does with the bowl game, oh, it'd be phenomenal. It might be the greatest thing pro wrestling's ever done. But alas, I am Tyler. He's Fred. Please like, subscribe, give us 5 stars, and have yourself a very cope and seed week.
Take care of yourselves, everyone.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now, you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.